Gupta began his portion of the webinar to outline the timeline of the spill before moving on to data collected on the event. He says a recent survey shows that while some residents were using the water to do laundry or for other purposes, many of those affected weren't drinking the water at the beginning of March.
About 85 to 90% people were utilizing the water for some reason. However, what's impressive was only about 5% or less people were using it to drink. This is, if you think about March 1st, you're thinking about maybe 2 months, almost 2 months after the event. It's remarkable.
As for those who were believed to have been exposed to MCHM, Gupta says data indicates there were two main spikes where residents sought medical attention for skin and eye irritation, rashes, and nausea, among other symptoms.
What is remarkable here is on January 9th, we saw a spike in symptoms, and we will discuss which symptoms. It went down on about the 12th and 13th to low levels, and then as the flushing began, the symptoms again resumed, and they went over a period of days because the flushing process didn't develop suddenly. It was opened up in zones, and we believe that's probably the reason people develop symptoms.
Using syndromic surveillance data from medical providers in Kanawha and Putnam counties, Gupta estimates nearly 93,000 people may have experienced symptoms related to the spill. From a home survey conducted during water sampling, Dr. Andrew Welton of the University of South Alabama believes over 108,000 residents may have been medically impacted. Those estimates, which attempt to account for those who did not seek treatment, far outnumber data released by the Department of Health and Human Resources. Those reports indicate that more than 500 residents sought medical attention from reported exposures in the 2 weeks following the spill. Conference participants also heard from the West Virginia Bureau for Public Health's Martha McElfresh, who helped oversee testing of 581 of some 3,000 samples collected in the weeks following the spill. But one of the main challenges McElfresh notes has been given little attention over the past 3.5 months, mental health.
2 weeks after, we had a lot of people that were kind of falling apart at the seams, which is fairly common. The water company management had the same problems. When you put people through days like this and nights like that, it's very difficult, but we worked through it.
As for response from the West Virginia Poison Center, Dr. Elizabeth Sharman says the first call regarding the spill came in 2 minutes after the announcement of the Do Not Use order, and a total of 637 calls were received by the center by the end of the night. However, she says a lack of staffing caused a few problems in getting information to members of the public who had called with concerns.
We did not like the fact that people had busy signals or not all questions were answered, but I think given the situation, we did the best that we could do. The number of calls that came in that first night ended up being 27% of the total call volume for this acute phase. And we're calling the acute phase from the time of the Do Not Use order until a day after all the lines zones had been opened for use.
But as recovery efforts continue, the question remains as to how long the incident might impact public health. McElfresh says it's far from over.
No, it is not, because we still have citizens calling, wanting their water testing. They still have many questions that cannot be answered at this juncture, and it's going to be a problem for a long time to come.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Dave Mistich.